Your world, your challenges, your faith. When faith within engages the world without, there's power. It's living life from the inside out.
In June's Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, the Supreme Court did what many prayed it would. It overturned Roe v. Wade. The decision's going to save lives. It's also going to leave many women in the same desperate conditions that motivated them to seek abortions. Many are poor or alone, overwhelmed, unsupported, or in fragile health. So what does it mean for a Christian to be pro-life in an America after Roe? We'll talk about that today on Family Life's Inside Out. I'm Martha Menikas Foster, and my guest is Jen Pollock Michel. She's a speaker, podcaster, and award-winning author who's working on her fifth book. Her recent Christianity Today article is titled, "I Was Pro-Life in Theory. It Took Much More to Actually Help." Jen, we're at the what now or now what chapter in the pro-life story. What do you think it means and doesn't mean to be pro-life after the Dobbs decision?
I think one thing that it doesn't mean is that, you know, everything is ended, you know, that jubilation is sort of like the final note. I think there's a lot of work that's actually just beginning and continuing. I want to say continuing because I think there are so many Christians throughout the country who have a long history of helping women in unwanted pregnancies. And we know that unwanted pregnancies are going to continue. Mm. And while there will be legal ramifications for women, you know, states that now outlaw abortion, there will be other states that continue to have legal abortions. And in every state, as you mentioned in your intro, we will have women who, married and unmarried, face an unwanted pregnancy, face fear, anxiety, and real challenges for bringing that baby into the world. And I think a pro-life position means that we're helping to reimagine a world where every baby is not only brought into the world, but able to flourish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So moving from a theoretical pro-life position, that's messy. So how do we begin to invest in some of the lives that are saved because a mother does not have an abortion? How do we make that investment?
Yes. I mean, that is essentially what I had written about in my Christianity Today piece when an editor reached out for a piece after the decision. I thought, you know, the most honest reaction that I can give is that this takes a lot of work. And my husband and I have for many, many years been involved with an organization called Safe Families. We've been involved in the U.S. We've been involved in Canada. And this is an organization run by Christians, partnered with churches to help families in crisis so that families can stay together. But what you realize is that it takes a lot of time to be invested in the life of usually a single mother. That's often who we've helped through Safe Families in a time of crisis, you know, and sometimes they have other children and now mm-hmm. they have a new pregnancy. And the situation that I described in the article was helping a refugee, a mother who was sent ahead by her husband to Canada. We were living in Canada at the time, and he didn't follow behind. Mm-hmm. And she had brought her young son. She was pregnant with twins at the time. And if you can imagine what this young mother faced,
no,
you know, bringing
yeah.
twins into the world, having a toddler, and how to actually care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mentioned in the article is that it wasn't just me who helped. You know, it really was this entire village of people who helped.
Mm-hmm.
Helped her get to medical appointments, helped her to get to immigration appointments, you know, just help the boys as they've grown older, adjust to the school system. And it's just been a really big task. And I think that really sobers me as a Christian, mm-hmm. that I can say that I am pro-life, and yet would I willingly inconvenience myself for the life of another person? And that challenges me as a Christian. I have to be honest that I struggle. I feel resistant to that.
Sure.
You know, I kind of want a comfortable, convenient life, and it's hard to give up time and money, too, to help families in crisis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that really struck me in your article is that you compare time to the widow's mite, that it's the modern widow's mm-hmm. mite. It's a currency that's incredibly difficult to sacrifice. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. I think a lot of us can relate to that. And your honesty is refreshing, because there's what we think we should do and there's what we want to do. And they're frequently, at least for me, not the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I wrote that because, well, the subject of my next book and just something that I've thought about so much is how unwilling I often am to sacrifice time for other people. And yet I know that God is on the side of the vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And when you think about, you know, the single mother or the widow, the orphan, I mean, these biblical categories of people who are vulnerable and God cares about them and makes provision for them. And so that has to matter to me as a Christ follower. But it also means that I have to arrange my life differently. I have to, I think, create a margin of time in my calendar to care for other people's children. Mm-hmm. You know, I have actually 5 children myself. And, you know, so many modern American families run like crazy because we're chauffeuring our kids here and there, and they're involved in all kinds of activities. And I think it is very countercultural to actually think about our time as not belonging to us and not even belonging to our children. How do we as families create a margin of time so that we actually have something to give mm-hmm. to families in crisis?
Mm. That's inspirational. Those questions are really, really important ones. So if God is in fact calling his people to be more than theoretically pro-life, and he is, mm-hmm. how do we begin?
You know what? I think so many listeners can probably actually think about what matters for their own children. You know, when you think about raising children, what kind of world do you want for your children? And so many probably listeners have resources where they're able to create kind of the conditions for flourishing for their children. Maybe they can send their children to a safe school. They have access to medical care. They have a relative safety in which to raise their children. Mm-hmm. But that's not true for all American children. And what I think Christians could really start to think about, and what I'd like to challenge myself to think about, is how do I care about children who don't have the resources that my own children have, so that we can help women consider wanting to bring a child into the world and feeling that she might have the resources available to her to actually feed that child, clothe that child, educate that child, give that child a safe environment, give them the kind of medical care that they need. So you can be involved in Safe Families, for example, is one Christian organization that's all over North America and actually all over the world. You know, you can, as a church, consider how might you locally be involved? What are the needs involved? Honestly, even just giving to your local food pantry helps families in crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, so that people, when they need food, they have somewhere to go. How do you talk about raising the level of education across your state, not just in your local neighborhood? You know, how do we create just safe environments for children to grow up in? So what I would really encourage people is you don't have to think necessarily super big. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you think small and you should partner with other people. My own experience with Safe Families is that there's so much power in a network of people that join hands together and say, you know what, we'll just make a little dent for one or two families or a handful of families in our area. Mm-hmm. Imagine if Christians like got really serious about just digging in locally, helping people locally, then that movement would really spread. I would love for us to exercise the kind of creativity that God gives to his people to imagine all the ways that we could create the kind of world where not only abortion is illegal, but it's actually undesirable. Mm-hmm. I don't think the majority of women want to give up their children, want to abort their children. I think they just can't imagine raising them well. How could we change that equation for women is what I'd love to think about.
Oh, that's beautiful. And well, there's so many things in what you said to think about, but among them are the idea of looking at other people's children in the same way that you look at your own, and what is it that you want for them? And then moving from there with how can mm-hmm. I make this different or that different for those children? Mm-hmm. Because in the process, of course, we're also doing it for that mother and for that family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, whether it's education or food or time, like you said, actually with the people. Well, I really mm-hmm. appreciated your article, and I really appreciate talking with you. Thank you so much, Jen, for being here with me on Inside Out.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks, Martha.
My guest has been Jen Pollock Michel. To learn more about Jen and her writing, podcasting, speaking, and her upcoming book, find your way to jenpollockmichel.com. That's JenPollockMichel.com. I'm Martha Menikas Foster, and I promise not to spell that out. And you've been listening to Inside Out on Family Life.